Jill Anderson is a North Shore naturalist. She lives here in Cook County and joins us periodically to talk about phenology, or what's going on in the woods right now. Welcome back, Jill.
Hi.
Well, riddle me this, Batman. Why are birches white? Why does birch bark peel the way it does? And why is it such a great fire starter? And anything else you have to add about birch?
Batman, huh? Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Please do.
Okay. Yeah, birch. What an amazing tree. And I think birch, at least in my world, really kind of jumps out at this time of year, in part because, boy, you know, it's firewood season. So there's that part. We've just witnessed this beautiful change of color in the birch leaves. And then once the leaves in general are down in this kind of transitional time, that those white birches are one of the really beautiful aesthetics of the November in my world anyway. So yeah, good time to talk about birch. So why are birch white? Well, the principal reason birch are white is because the bark of the birch, paper birch, contains a compound called betulin. And betulin is also the compound that makes birch water repellent. So those two things go hand in hand in this case, and betulin is a compound, so it's a number of things joined together. It's not a single thing. And one of the constituents of betulin is another substance called suberin, I believe is the name, and that's a natural polymer. So it's this compound substance called betulin that is what creates the white color, the arrangement of the crystals, and give it its water repellent nature that has been so valuable. We think right away of birch bark canoes and birch containers that have been used by indigenous peoples for many thousands of years. We think also of the traditional sod roofs of Scandinavia. And here, you know, people were doing that here too. They used birch bark as the bottom layer because of that water repellent.
Kind of like tar paper.
Kind of like tar paper, right. And the wigwam of Native people. So, man, incredibly valuable in that respect. And then it has this amazing additional quality of being so flammable. That flammability comes from a different compound. It's an oil in the bark that is called betulum. And
it's a good thing I don't have to write this out.
Yeah. And betulum is also really has a really interesting cultural history. So it's this oil that's embedded in the bark that creates this great flammable substance. And more than 10,000 years ago, humans had figured out a way to laboriously extract the oil from birch bark. And that could be used as a preserving oil, just as an oil, so you could rub it into leather or something. But then they also figured out that if you further reduce that oil, so it's a heating thing, again, to remove some things and concentrate the other things from the oil, you can make something called birch tar. And birch tar, turns out, is this fantastic glue. So it's a thermoplastic compound that is much less brittle than like spruce pitch or pine pitch. So it could be used especially for things that needed to have more flexibility so that they wouldn't break if you use them in some abrupt sort of hard way. So archaeological evidence has shown that people were using birch tar to haft blades to handles, for instance. So this is something, you know, that might receive a sharp blow as you used it to kill something or to make something, and you needed something other than pine or spruce pitch because that was too brittle once it had hardened. If you hit your blade on something hard, it would just come apart, that would crack. But apparently this birch tar has the enough flexibility in it that it doesn't do that. So already people were using it more than 10,000 years ago to make tools, and also in Greece they were using it to glue pots together. So just it's just fascinating to me that how people figured these things out.
this stuff comes in layers, some really thin, and then, you know, I mean, it's, I mean, everybody's done this, you know, with birch bark, but you can peel off just what looks like just a pale paper birch, like thickness of a paper, or you can use three or four, you know, all that kind of stuff. Why is it put together that way?
Well, in the case of birch, well, let's start with a kind of a basic fact of all of our woody species, trees and shrubs. Ideally, the bark is doing some photosynthesis, so it's not the main, that's the leaves, the needles, but some the bark does some photosynthesis. But to do that, it has to be able to breathe. And so it has pores in it, and those pores are called lenticels. And in most trees, once a tree matures and the bark becomes thicker, the lenticels become hidden down in the cracks and the furrows of the bark, so we can't see it. But in the case of the birch, the lenticels are those beautiful, fine black lines you see, and that make the little weaknesses kind of in those thin layers that you're talking about. So if you were going to take a thin layer of birch bark off the tree, you don't have to remove it from the entire length of the tree, right? Because it has these little weaker areas, and those are these black lines, and those are the lenticels. So that's where the tree bark is breathing. And in the case of the birch, this peeling is what prevents the pores from becoming clogged or closed over so that they wouldn't work anymore. So the birch naturally is exfoliating, not all at once and not all the layers at once, but it's naturally exfoliating the outer layers over
time.
The
paper thin ones, you see those on.
Yeah, right.
Well, so obviously then because it's doing that naturally, if you take a paper thin layer off, you're not hurting anything, but at what point are you damaging the tree?
Well, there's a transition where you go from the bark to the living tissue of the tree, and the living tissue is very thin. It's really only one thickness of a cell. So it's very easy to go too deep. Or for if you went down to that last thickness of true bark, you'd rip those living cells off when you take the bark off. So removal of bark of those outermost fine layers is not a problem. And down to a certain depth, you're not going to injure the living tissue of the tree. But it's also a fine line between the last of the bark and the living tissue. So it requires for people to successfully take bark from living trees to use for producing some material, canoe or a basket or whatever, requires a great deal of knowledge and a great deal of care.
Jill Anderson, botanist and plant ecologist, thanks for helping us understand the mind-boggling birch.
You bet.